The following is an encore presentation from CKUW's archives. Archives of your favorite local programming are available online at ckuw.ca/schedule.
Thank you for bringing us on air. And so I'm just going to give a little rundown of what the program is going to be about this morning. I'd like to make you the acknowledgement that on Wooden Spoons, we acknowledge that we are located on Treaty 1 territory, the traditional land and waters of the Cree, Ojibwe, Dakota, and Dene people, as well as the birthplace of the Métis Nation and the heart of the Métis homeland. We also acknowledge the Shoal Lake Number 40 First Nation and its territory towards our life-giving water. So on this today, our program, we have a guest, as we normally do for the first half of the program, followed by a discussion. I'm going to be having a discussion about Canadian Biotechnology Action Network, the issues there, and what is at stake here. And we will follow that and some announcements. So on that note, I'd like to, we have a return guest, Mark Friesen. And because May is Chemical Sensitivities Month, this is a good time for her to be talking about the topic of electromagnetic hypersensitivity. And Mark has a Master of Science degree and is a retired research biologist with the federal government at the University of Manitoba. And she experienced electromagnetic sensitivities at her workplace and was on disability leave for 3 years before returning to work for accommodation for EHS, that's electromagnetic sensitivities, for her symptoms. Getting the diagnosis for EHS was no easy task. Marg was also a co-founder of Chemical Sensitivities Manitoba in 1998 and the Environmental Health Association of Manitoba in 2012. She is currently an advisor to a group called Canadians for Safe Technology, and the acronym is capital C, number 4, ST. So with the deployment of, currently an advisor with the Group for Safe Technologies, who specializes in the scientific evidence on health effects of wireless radiation. With the deployment of 5G antennas, Margaret has also formed a 5G group, which works to educate and protect the public and living things from the radiation dangers posed by the rollout of 5G technology. So her work involves meetings with the public, organizing educational events and meetings on Zoom. During the COVID years, public meetings had to be curtailed, but the work continued with CAST on Zoom. So today we'll be talking to Margaret. Margaret will be continuing our discussion from last Friday, because it's such an important topic and very few people know about it, to tell you the truth. Welcome to Wooden Spoons, Marg.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so maybe we could just start. It's always good to repeat things. Would you explain the role of Health Canada and the guideline of Safety Code 6 in addressing health concerns and providing guidelines for exposure to this invisible toxin? And why are those guidelines so inadequate?
Right, thank you very much. Safety Code 6 are guidelines that are set by Health Canada for human exposure to wireless radiation, such as cell phones, cell towers, Wi-Fi routers, baby monitors. It goes on and on. If it's wireless and commercially available in Canada, then it should have undergone Safety Code 6 compliance. Now, Safety Code 6 is our guidelines, contain guidelines. It's Innovation, Science, Economic Development, which is in charge of ensuring that there is compliance, and they've adopted Safety Code 6 for compliance purposes. So Safety Code 6 in for Health Canada doesn't really have force of law behind it, but it does as far as Innovation, Science, Economic Development, which we refer to as ISED. Now, these guidelines are set for devices that are held close to the body, called SAR, unless we're talking about 5G frequencies, in which case power density applies. And power density also applies to devices that are held far from the body, or that occur far from the body, such as cell towers. The problem lies in that these guidelines are based only on heating. So what Health Canada maintains that if it doesn't heat above 1 degree for tissue heating over 6 minute exposure, then it will not harm. And it disregards totally the all of the science, and there are hundreds of high-quality studies and thousands of other studies which demonstrate that there are biological effects well below Safety Code 6. So that's the problem, is we've got a situation here where Health Canada is not looking at, is not incorporating the scientific evidence that wireless radiation exposures can be harmful at well below its guidelines.
And that's a good point that you're making. Safety Code 6 is not up to code, really. I mean, not up to par in terms of the needs of regulation. But I also think it's very important that we all begin to understand, and we have to learn this really quickly, that there is a corporatization of all of government. There's a corporatization of everything we do in our society. We no longer have a Health Canada that, well, maybe we never did, that are really concerned about our health, but more about supporting the corporate entities, because there is corporatization has been intertwined with government, and it is a very close connection there. So we have to take we have to start understanding that health is not really the goal of Health Canada.
Well, we do know that Health Canada can work at very slow pace, and we see that, but things can change. So we've seen major messaging regarding adverse effects of smoking. Asbestos now has been banned banned. Both of those are class 1 known human carcinogens. Wireless radiation, radio frequency radiation, has been classified as a 2B possible carcinogen, which means there is evidence to indicate that it can be carcinogenic, or is possibly carcinogenic. And there's now more science, and we've got some eminent scientists, including Dr. Anthony Miller, who is a Canadian scientist who actually worked on the monograph that was put out after the 2B classification, who now has written first author of publications in the peer-reviewed literature that wireless radiation should now be considered as a class 1, which is the same as asbestos and tobacco smoking. So what really needs to happen is the public needs to speak out about what is happening here. I mean, I hear about brain cancers and colorectal cancers, thyroid cancers, and there's we see that, we observe that in friends and family that we have, and we need to really move Health Canada along on this particular issue. Now, the guideline that they have for the 5G technologies, and that 6 gigahertz to 300 gigahertz, that was just put out in January 2021, and it's a real concern because we have no human studies, and Health Canada says this in their own report, that there are no human studies were identified that assessed endpoints such as cancer, ocular effects, reproductive system effects, impacts on the immune system, and non-specific symptoms or any other adverse health outcome. And when it comes to the heating, they doubled the human exposure limits for 5G devices held close to the body on human studies, and the longest study was for just a matter of minutes. I think it was 30 minutes. Not even. No long-term studies at all.
Mm-hmm. And so who does these studies that are going to be determining the safety of these of this technology? Who does the study? Is it industry supported, or is it publicly funded studies?
Well, I don't know of ongoing studies that are occurring. And this is the thing, is so absence of proof is not absence of harm. So, you know, for the 5G agencies, there may be some studies going on. I doubt very much if it's Health Canada study, because they've been asked what they're, you know, what they've been studying, and they're not studying it, and they've put very little money towards funding towards their own research. They say they don't do their own research. I have the numbers up to 2018 of the amount of money that they've devoted to their own research, and that money totals well under $1 million. It's with an M, well under $1 million since the year 2000 to 2018. Meanwhile, iSED has made billions with a B from selling the spectrum. So
that again is this really shows it's all about corporate, you know, a corporate bias is within Health Canada.
Well, Health Canada and iSED. iSED has adopted Safety Code 6. They could adopt safer limits. And the building biologists, the bioinitiative report, I think Austria has a lower limit. So they could actually theoretically adopt safer limits as well. So it's a combination that Health Canada isn't really doing its job. And then iSED isn't really, you know, being protective, taking the most protective measures for the general public. And we know we have the revolving door. We have a very recent example where the minister, former minister of iSED, Navdeep Bains, has now been hired by Rogers Communications.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, these are people working in industry, and this is the revolving door. They get into power, into positions of where they have power and influence. And
so what we have is, so we have these limits for humans. So safety code 6 is just about people, and then the localized limits for the 6 gigahertz and above. But we have nothing for wildlife. We have nothing for birds, bees, and trees, for pollinators. And how we just recently spoke with some of the people from environment and climate change. They did put out a report which supports that wireless radiation, and we're including in here parts of the lower spectrum at all, called extremely low frequencies. And in this report, written by research scientists from Environment and Climate Change Canada, I'm just going to quote one sentence. It says, the potential of increasing EMF, so that's electromagnetic fields or wireless radiation, exposures as a contributing or confounding factor to adverse changes in wildlife in conjunction with recognized environmental stresses should be considered. So then we ask them, well, what are you doing about it? And they are doing nothing. There's been no money allocated to it. There is no staff allocated to it. And we know from a very comprehensive review of the literature, it's they quote about 1,000 or more references in a three-part review. Blake Leavitt, who's an award-winning science writer, Henry Lai, who's a scientist who has been working in primary research on biological effects of wireless radiation for decades, University of Washington. And then Albert Manville, who's a bird specialist from the U.S., they've compiled the literature on this and have found that there are adverse effects at very, very low levels, well below safety code 6. So the human exposure limits that we have don't come close to protecting many of the plants and animals that, of course, we need to have a healthy ecosystem. And if we don't have healthy ecosystems, there goes our life support systems.
That's correct. You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM. We're talking to Mark Friesen, and she's a member of CAST, Citizens for Safe Technology. I'm Mary Jane Eason with co-host Nichelle. Anyway, and this is 95.9 FM on CKOW. Yeah, those are very, very concerning issues, and the slowness to act is been a pattern.
Right. Now we have a couple of things that, you know, are going in the right direction. For example, the Green Party of Canada has ratified two policies that relate to wireless guidelines. They don't have to do with wildlife necessarily per se, on their own. One of them is to update Health Canada's guidelines for microwave radiation exposure, which is Safety Code 6. And the other one is to advocate for a national internet access strategy that prioritizes environmental and human health. So what's happening here is that there are more and more cell towers that are coming up. They're coming up all over Canada. In some cases, people speak out if they know about it. They'll speak out, oppose them. In a few cases, the city of Winnipeg does write a letter of non-concurrence. In other cases, people don't know about it, and the cell towers just go ahead. Those are the big ones. So we've got about six that have just been processed, and then we've got a few that are ongoing here. So we have, those are the big ones, and people usually know what they are. Now, the other thing is that, you know, the towers are just basically built so that the antennas can be put high up. So in the city, of course, there is often not land for a cell tower to go up, so they're putting them on apartment buildings. So there are many antennas that are on top of apartment buildings. And if under certain circumstances, they can be excluded from any public consultation. And the other thing that is excluded, and we're very concerned about this and have talked to the city of Winnipeg. They had a public consultation, and there were quite a few Winnipeggers who presented at that. And there is information on the Winnipeg engagement site if people want to look up more information. So what's coming down the pike here is that 5G frequencies, the smaller frequencies. So 5G is a marketing term, and the frequencies we have now that are called 5G don't include the millimeter waves. which are the ones that are in the high 20s and 30 gigahertz and above. So when I say millimeter waves, I mean, you know how big or small a millimeter is. So these are very tiny, whereas the frequencies for, let's say, for microwave radiation for Wi-Fi, which is the same frequency, 2.45 gigahertz coming out of a microwave oven, they're longer. They're at least 20 inches long. And then for cell phones, they can even be longer. So the millimeter waves don't travel as well through windows and doors or vegetation. And so they need to put, they want to sell us a whole bunch of gadgets, anything that can be wireless in a home. We're going to be deluged with, you know, marketing that says we really need those devices. So, but to communicate, the antennas need to be very close to the devices. So in some areas in Canada, and certainly in the U.S., these antennas are coming up on top of lampposts, other utility posts, sides of buildings. So they want to put, for a regular city block, every half block. So there would be four antennas for every city block and, you know, an equivalent distance in other areas. So basically what that's doing is it's putting a cell tower smack dab in the middle of residential areas. So the amount that we're being exposed to will increase considerably. And we know, so it's not just the millimeter waves that are coming into these antennas, but what will be emitted are the lower frequencies that we already know. There's a lot of science indicating it can cause cancer, neurological effects. It can cause electrohypersensitivity symptoms, so problems sleeping, headaches, nausea, ear ringing, tinnitus, pain, you know, depends on sort of the person's weakest spot. And we already have a lot of people in Canada. The estimate is 3% to 30% even. Dr. Magda Havas, a retired professor from the University of Trent, believes that about 30% of the population could be having some adverse effects. They're still functioning fine, but it could be headaches, or it could be lack of sleeping, or it could be ringing in the ears, dizziness, or not able to think straight. And then there's about 3%. This is another thing Health Canada is not doing. It's not looking at the numbers of people who are adversely affected. There are numbers for people with environmental sensitivities, such as chemical sensitivities. That's in the Canadian Health questionnaire. It's something to that effect. So we know there's about 3% of Canadians who are affected, and many are overlapping with symptoms of electrohypersensitivity, but we do not have Canadian numbers on that. So that's the other thing. So we know that the frequencies that are already out there can be very problematic for some people. Some people can be disabled. I was for a period disabled from working and at my job. And fortunately for me, I was able to get the medical support to get accommodation in the workplace. So I worked there for 6 years until I retired. So because I know that people are being adversely affected, I'm speaking out because many of them are not in a position to do that.
And it's wonderful that there are people like you, Marg, and others that are speaking out, and people that have a scientific background, because as you say, when you tell people about 5G, their eyes glaze over. And it's one of those topics that are just horrible. And I'm one of those people who have glazed eyes, but it's frightening, and we are sensitive. And you are also you know, acknowledging that there is information about the effects of 5G on all forms of life, and the pollinators have been identified as being very important in order that we have crops and
right.
that we and that we can have insects to feed the birds. So birds are very important. We are in an ecosystem. We can't separate that. So do you want to talk about the research that has been conducted with, I believe it was with Prevent Cancer Now, on the effects?
Right.
These effects?
So when the Levitt, Bly, and Manville review was published, we thought, oh, this is wonderful. I mean, we knew that the literature was out there showing adverse effects that pre-5G, so G here stands for generation when we're talking about 3G, 4G, 5G. So we knew that the pre-5G frequencies were problematic. And so we put together a white paper, which isn't available, as well as many of the references, on a site called wirelessenviroimpacts.science. Wirelessenviroimpacts.science. So people can find this information there. So one of the reasons that we did this was to put together the information in a fairly short form that we could then present to politicians who were amending the Canadian Environmental Protection Act. So this wireless radiation is a form of pollution. It fits the definition perfectly, except for one thing. When it talks about in CEPA, the Canadian Environmental Protection Act, in the definitions, it uses for pollutant, air pollutant, it uses substance. So then there's some discussion on whether electromagnetic fields are a substance. Do they belong? There is, we did a very comprehensive review of the acts, and we could find radio frequency radiation not covered anywhere. Although there is one portion in CEPA which actually does cover a bit of the electromagnetic spectrum. So we made the case that this should be in CEPA, but unfortunately that effort got derailed, and they had to move so quickly that there was a vote in the Senate on it. It was not debated on its merits. We have to thank Senator Dennis Patterson for putting valiantly, trying to put forward motions to have this included in CEPA, but unfortunately it got derailed by basically technicalities. So we want to keep on having this added somewhere. Now, Minister Guilbeault has said on a number of occasions that there are so many other environmental issues which should be included in an act, and he talks about a CEPA 2. So right now, the original CEPA, which came into force about just over 20 years ago, a lot has changed. That they want to really put forward quickly. And I think it's in the House of Commons now. So what we're doing is we're going to try again, but with a new legislation that we hope will come out of this. Now, the thing is that there is, when Health Canada did their review, they based the safety on these human studies, human skin and tissue, on human studies that were no longer than 30 minutes. So that's kind of questionable right there. They disregarded the 10 animal studies that were done on 5G frequencies, which most or all showed adverse effects, and they also excluded the tissue and cell studies. Now, there are over 80, I think close to 100 of studies on tissues and cell studies, and those are important in terms of mechanism, what could be happening at the cellular level. And they do what there were a couple of experts that looked at that. They've done reviews, and they say, we really don't have enough information here on which to set a standard, period. Now, that's got to do with the human aspect. When we get to the environmental aspect. Now, 5G frequencies, as I said, are millimeter waves. And what there's been simulations by Dr. Thielens on using the honeybee and other insects. And what actually happens is not just the biological effects of the DNA damage that we've seen in which would be of concern that we've seen in the pre-5G frequencies, but also with these small millimeter waves, there could be heating in insects. And so that will affect their physiology, their metabolism. It could affect their life cycle. It could wreak havoc, to put it mildly. So humans, mammals, we can regulate our own temperature. There's an ability, you know, if things get too cold or too hot, we have an ability to regulate our temperature. Insects depend on the environment for maintaining a temperature where they can function. So this has got enormous implications. I mean, we can't stress this enough, that we really do need more information before this is deployed. I mean, the other thing is we've got these small antennas coming up. We've got the big antennas coming up. And the other thing we've got is thousands of satellites going into space. And we really don't know the adverse effects of all of those satellites. What we do know is we know that insect populations around the world are declining. And it's a serious issue that they're declining so much. Now, there are other so-called drivers that are considered. Amongst them are climate change and habitat loss and pesticide use. But this, as the environment and climate change report says, wireless radiation could be a cofactor. And this is something that should be studied before, and I would emphasize before, this technology is deployed. And that's just not happening. Now, there are a number of groups have gotten together and written something called the Suspend 5G Appeal. And in that, there's over 20,000 Canadians that have signed that. And we're hoping more will do that. And that is basically to hold off on deploying 5G technologies to promote fiber instead. So fiber optics, and this should be ideally to and through the premises so people aren't exposing to wireless in their homes. And to reevaluate Safety Code 6, taking into account the science that we have and doing more science when it comes to the 5G frequencies.
And where do you get to sign that petition? Where can appeal?
It's appel, the French spelling, 5G appeal. APPEAL, and I don't have what it is, whether it's a CA or whether it's a .org. If people can email me at marg.c4 with the number 4 ST for Safe Technology, Canadians for Safe Technology, at gmail.com, and I'll be glad to send them a link.
Well, that'd be great.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing is we want more say in having these cell towers sited. So there's a case right now in Channel Ridge on Salt Spring in BC where Rogers wants to put up a tower and maybe already has. The residents were opposed. The land use authority wanted a concurrence letter, the letter that said, yes, you can go ahead, rescinded because, according to them, Rogers had falsified the information on their application. And so they're opposed to it, but Rogers, last I heard, was just going ahead. There were demonstrations. People were objecting right there on the site. I think that now the residents don't have any more say, but it's called the Land Use Authority, which would be like the municipality comparable to the City of Winnipeg, whoever makes those decisions, has now triggered the dispute resolution mechanism. So now they want to take it to ICED directly. Now, we know from past that about a third of the dispute resolution mechanisms do actually go in favor of the people who are objecting, or the land use authority that's objecting, but many of them go forward anyway.
Yeah, because two-thirds are for the corporate interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, there's a lot of work to do. Our lives are at stake, let's put it that way. We are the silent killer that's happening around us, and we have to wake up to this. It's really...
Right.
There's also another, maybe you could mention... CARE, Canadian Alliance for Reducing Electric Smog.
Oh, yes.
I've
just actually spotted the website for the Suspend 5G Appeal. It's appel5gappeal.ca. appel5gappeal.ca. Right. So what's happened emerged out of BC, because there are quite a few cell towers have been proposed for BC, and they finally woken up to, you know, the health and environmental implications of these antennas so close to people. And there's a group now called the Canadian Alliance for Reducing Electrosmog that's emerged. They're just starting meetings. They're every second Wednesday in the evening. If anybody's interested, they can email me, and I'll be glad to ask Hillary, who's heading the group there, to be put on the list. And that is to get Minister ICED's attention. What happens is people write letters, but then his office, we don't know if he ever sees them, because he sends them to a bureaucrat who then just gets out the regular, you know, form letter and sends it out, and doesn't seem to understand that this is a very important issue, which has implications for human health and environmental health. So we need to get the ear of the minister and get this changed.
Yes. Mark, I know you're doing a lot of work, and I think we need to keep in touch with you about what is happening. Do you want to just, before we close, do you want to just mention or explain what you are working on now?
Well, right now, there's a resolution, by the way, if anybody's a member of the Council of Canadians, there's a resolution put forward that has regard to wireless radiation. So we hope, you know, you'll look into that and support it. We're also wanting the Health Committee, short name HESA, to look at this issue again. There were hearings in 2010. So this is a committee that... it provides oversight for Health Canada, and it's made of members of Parliament. And we would like them to look at this issue again. It was looked at it in 2010, 2015, and it's long overdue that we revisit this whole issue. So that's another thing that we're working hard on. The cell towers, of course, and we're going to really pushing for getting guidelines for wildlife in Canada.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Mark, for sharing so much information with us. And we look forward to having, have follow-up on what's happening in your work, and continue our...
Yes, and feel free to pass my email to anyone who's interested. So it's narg.c4, the number, st@gmail.com.
Yes, because actually somebody did email me asking for permission to have your contact information, and I sent it to this person.
Oh, good.
And so hopefully there will be others that are interested, and they can feel free to contact you, the more the better. So
yes.
Thank you so much, Marg, for joining us this morning.
And thank you for having me.
And I think now we have a song that we will have a musical break before we continue on.
can see her lying back in her satin dress in a room where you do what you don't confess. Sundown, you better take care. If I find you, then creeping round my back stairs. Sundown, you better take care. If I find you, then creeping round my back stairs. Sailor's dream, and she don't always say what she really means. Sometimes I think it's a shame when I get feeling better when I'm feeling no pain. Sometimes I think it's a shame when I get feeling better when I'm feeling no pain. Picture every move that a man could make. Getting lost in her loving is your first mistake. Sundown, you better take care. If I find you've been creeping round my back stairs. Sometimes I think it's a sin when I feel like I'm winning when I'm losing again. In her faded jeans, she's a hard-loving woman, got me feeling mean. Sometimes I think it's a shame when I get feeling better when I'm feeling no pain. Sundown, you better take care. If I find you've been creeping around my back stairs. Sundown, you better take care. And you've been creeping round my back stairs. Sometimes I think it's a sin when I feel like I'm winning when I'm losing again.
Hello and welcome back again to Wooden Spoons. You are tuning in to CKUW 95.9 FM from Winnipeg. Right now it is 8:46 a.m. and the temperature is 14 degrees Celsius, which will go around to 24 degrees Celsius and low of 11 degrees Celsius during night. Likewise, tomorrow, Saturday, it will be almost similar as today, but on Sunday, it will be 26 degrees Celsius. And again, welcome back, Marizin.
Yes, I'm going to be talking now, before our recipe, about another issue that by Canadian Biotechnology Action Network. And the topic is, the title is, Feds Hand GMO Regulation Over to Biotech Industry. So this is, you know, genetically modified foods have been around for a long time. Monsanto initiated this. Monsanto, who was responsible for making all the Agent Orange and all those other toxins that's used in the Vietnam War, they had a lot of power, being the corporation that they are, and they prevented Health Canada never labeled anything genetically modified. So nobody knew what was genetically modified or not. Most Canadians do not understand what that means. And so genetic modification at that time meant that they were taking genes from other species and putting it into certain organisms, into certain plants or whatever. So you might have issues with having, if you have an allergy and there was like a fish gene in your tomato and you were allergic to fish and you had a tomato that was genetically modified with a fish gene, you could have a lot of problems. And of course, we know that there's all kinds of problems these days with allergies, etc. Thank you to these corporate entities that have made these decisions for us. But anyway, so now they're not really doing species crossing the species barrier, which nature never does. That's one of the major things I learned in biology. Nature does not cross the species barrier, but Monsanto did. No problem there. But they now are doing, they're still doing genetic modification by switching genes around within the seed itself. And so they wanted to get, they want to be exempt from new gene edited GM seeds from government regulation. And so the Minister of Health, so it combined with this, with some, there was a decision made in May 22nd from the Minister of Health that Health Canada and the Canadian Food Inspection Agency will not check any safety data from product developers, and that companies can put these GMOs on the market without informing the government or public. And so this idea was opposed, of course, by the Canadian Biotechnology Action Network, opposed by the National Farmers Union, SASC Organics, and Vigilance OGM. Organic farmers have all been opposed to this. Specifically, gene-edited seeds and foods from plants that have no foreign DNA are now exempt from Part 5 of the seeds regulations and novel food regulations. So this change is the most serious development in the short history of GMOs. It is a logical extension of regulation and policies that already give tremendous power to biotechnology companies at the expense of safety and transparency. So Canada is in, I'm just reading from the report from Louise Charette. So she's the coordinator of CBAN, and Canada is in the middle of a global fight over the future of our food. This fight just got clearer. The biggest seed and pesticide companies in the world are also the same companies that dominate the GMO market. The federal government has just handed these companies control over the food system. We reject this corporate control. We will fight back against this corporate control of our food and seeds. We will continue to protect our environment against the risks of GMOs and to work in solidarity with farmers to fight back against corporate control over farming. These changes made by the federal government are not set in stone. They are changes to regulatory guidance documents that can be edited at any time. These changes have not been integrated into regulation. We can still stop this corporate self-regulation. So we are encouraged to write to our ministers, write to your member of parliament today, and you can go to the website of CBAN and get that information. And they have a letter there, and you can basically submit your position to in opposition to have regulation removed. Over the past 2 years, CBAN has presented clear arguments to regulators and the ministers about the need for independent government oversight of GMOs. Of course, this has never happened. We have supported farmers and consumers to send the message of the need for transparency. We brought together 105 groups to demand government oversight and transparency. We highlighted the voice of organic farmers who demanded no hidden GM seeds. These appeals and arguments have been rejected by the ministers in favor of the biotechnology industry. Support CBAN at this critical time. So this is where our responsibility lies, is in voicing our concern and voicing our disapproval of what is happening. Remember that if we don't know what seeds are GMO and what are not, that would be a huge loss for organic farming and regenerative farming. We have an obligation to support our farmers that grow without harming the earth, especially the organic farmers that do not use pesticides and use natural foods. This is the basis of our health and always was and shall always be. Once we drift away from that, we are heading in the wrong direction. And I am convinced that health problems will occur, that we will see more sickness than ever before, continue to grow, if we don't take back the inviolable rights of having natural seeds uncontaminated with genetic modification. So on that note, I'm going to turn to a recipe. It's a nice time of the year to have asparagus, and I know asparagus if you grow your own asparagus, you'll know that the flavor is so superior to anything that you can buy in the store. But being that it is, still there are a lot of, this is the season for asparagus. Early in the spring it comes up, but it takes a long time to grow, actually. It takes a long time to get the thick spears to develop. But it's some people are doing that. So this recipe is from, I'm just going to try and remember the name. I'll remember from Mary, Simply in Season by Mary Beth Lind and Kathleen Hockman West. And very neat recipe. So it calls for 1 pound or 500 grams of asparagus. And of course, you have to break off the woody ends. And then you lay the spears in a single layer on a baking sheet. You can take 3 to 4 cloves of garlic, minced, and some olive oil. And you sprinkle the asparagus with garlic. Then you drizzle with the olive oil. And you bake in a preheated oven for about 400 degrees or Fahrenheit or 200 degrees Celsius. Or you can put it on a grill, shaking the pan or partially turning every few minutes. So when the asparagus starts to look wrinkled and brown in some spots, about 5 minutes on the grill or a bit longer in the oven, remove that from the heat and then season to taste with salt and pepper. If desired, you can drizzle with balsamic vinegar or lemon juice immediately before serving. And you can serve hot or at room temperature. So the cheese topping, you can also use a cheese topping for variation. And by combining about an ounce of crumbled goat cheese or feta cheese and 1/4 teaspoon of chopped fresh rosemary and 1/2 teaspoon of chopped fresh chives. And now, of course, chives are starting to pop up in gardens, and this is a good time to use them. And a quarter cup of chopped walnuts. And this will give it a crunchy texture. And you spoon over cooked asparagus. So the asparagus is a nice side dish. And it's very delicious, actually. Have you ever eaten asparagus, Nishal?
No.
Okay. Anyway, it should be out on the shelves pretty soon these days. Well, it's now out on the shelves. I'm not sure. They probably might be imported, but I know that asparagus is grown locally. And Anyway, so I think we are now at the end of our episode for Wooden Spoons this week, and I'd like to thank all the listeners for tuning in, and thank our guest Mark Friesen for her input and all the.
Winnipeg. Sunday Night Punk with Spanky Boy, Mean Man, and Tiny O.